All right, well, hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Prison Justice Show. I'm your host, Sam Notla. Last time we had our third episode in a series on prison literacy. We talked a bit about censorship, what kinds of books and materials get into prisons, who profits, and why. We're going to pause our series on prison literacy there for a while, but let's get into today's roadmap. We're going to talk about the Ban the Box movement. Ban the Box refers to, quote, removing the checkbox that asks if applicants have a criminal record from hiring applications. What that basically means is that, when you apply for a job, they ask, have you ever been convicted of a felony or anything like that, had any arrests? Ban the Box is basically a movement that says, let's do away with this question, for the reasons that we'll get into. And so today, we're going to go over why it matters, how to help out, and some more things. And I hope you enjoy the show today. So, to start off, there's actually an interesting note, which is that Illinois actually has a ban the box law on the books as of the start of 2015, but there are a few caveats, according to the Labor Law Center. While employers can't ask about an applicant's criminal record early on, they can still reject the applicant for their criminal history. This becomes relevant in the background check phase, which is after an interview and employment offer. The law doesn't require employers to hire previously incarcerated individuals either, though. It's not like it's threatening businesses to take in people that they don't want to. It's, nothing spooky or scary like that. And furthermore, it doesn't apply to employers with less than 15 employees, positions that exclude the ex-incarcerated based on state or federal law. That's like, there are some jobs where you aren't allowed to hold those positions if you've committed a felony or if you've been incarcerated or anything, just based on the law. And it doesn't apply to positions that need a fidelity bond or employers hiring under the EMS System Act, which is just the Emergency Medical Services System. So, like your first responders and everything. So the motivation behind ban the box laws is fairly simple. The idea is that there's a stigma attached to having a criminal record, right? So ex-prisoners routinely face difficulties in attaining gainful employment because this stigma prevents many companies from even considering them in the hiring process. Many of their applications are automatically filtered out, and many jobs that do hire ex-prisoners compensate them at a much lower rate than the general field of available positions. A lack of gainful employment is a much stronger influence on recidivism rate as well, which is the rate of whether or not an ex-prisoner will reoffend. This initiative won't force companies to hire ex-prisoners, but it will at least give them a fighting chance, at least a way to get past the filters. So before we get into a bit more of the nitty-gritty, I want to address a few points as to why we should care about such initiatives. There's always the obvious reason, we should care because ex-prisoners are fellow human beings, let's treat them well. But there are other reasons as well. So let's start with the idea of prison in general. So essentially, a prison is a way, ideally, for the state to rehabilitate members of the public that breached a legal contract with the state, by breaking a law. That basically means that it's a way for the state to be like, you broke a law, that's something wrong, so we're going to rehabilitate this part of you that does this wrong thing. So then, when someone's released from prison, we should logically consider them rehabilitated, right? Just like the rest of us. Yet, when you have stigmas like this, that are allowed to follow prisoners past their stay, affecting their lives beyond just the experiences from the years that they've served, this says something different about our system. These stigmas say that these prisoners aren't really rehabilitated, because if they were, then they would look the same on paper to everyone. What these really say then is don't break the law because we'll punish you if you do. In fact, we'll punish you so hard that even after you get out of prison, we'll continue to punish you. And the idea there is that rehabilitation isn't really the point. It's more about making an example of people. It's more about making sure that everyone else can look at them and say, oh my God, I don't want that to happen to me, so I'm just not going to violate the law or anything like that. But, it's not like there's some monolithic system that has this ideology. I think that it's more just kind of like a reflection of reality. That's to say that it's not like there's a bunch of people sitting in some room, cackling to each other, talking about how they're making an example of people that break the law. It's just more a reflection of how things have played out. So, a big part of movements like this, the Ban the Box movement, to me, is to fight against this idea. It's to fight against the idea that justice is punitive, petty, and just serves as a warning. These movements promote the idea that prison is about rehabilitation, then, and that we should understand that a rehabilitated individual is just an individual, just like you or I. Because otherwise, what's the point of having prisons and prison sentences in the first place? If your prisons don't properly rehabilitate prisoners, our response shouldn't be to needlessly punish the prisoners, but to reform our prisons themselves. You know, reform the prison system structurally, methodologically, in whatever way necessary. Because rehabilitation is the primary purpose of the system, and at the point that the system isn't achieving its primary purpose, which comes above all other punitive consequences, it's clear that something needs reworking. Another reason to care about this is the cost of recidivism. So, as we talked about in our prison literacy episodes, the cost of recidivism in Illinois is on average $120,000 per instance. So, reducing recidivism is in our best interest economically, and given the high rates of recidivism at a national rate of 43%, it's an issue that needs to be addressed. And at the point that you can understand that it's easy to lapse back into a criminal lifestyle. If you don't have the means to avoid lapsing back into it, basically, what that means is if you don't have like a gainful employment, a place to rent by using that employment money, you know, a way to have like a stable life, then you're more likely to fall back into that criminal lifestyle. And so that's all a point that needs to be addressed, you know, about reducing recidivism, because even just from an economic standpoint, you'd want to reduce it, just for like your average taxpayer. There are also racial implications at hand because the prison system is so racialized in the first place. So, considering the disproportionate incarceration of African American individuals, many civil rights groups have pointed out that questions about criminal records allow employers to openly discriminate against African Americans. A sociologist named Deva Pager actually did a study on the effect of the box, and what she found was that overall, having this kind of question on applications reduced the chance of a callback for an interview by 50% for someone who had a criminal record. But this wasn't even uniform between different races. Incarcerated black applicants actually had it worse, with their chances reduced by roughly 65% instead. And it actually gets even worse because what they found is that if you were a white applicant with a criminal record and you actually like saw them in person, they found that then you had a much higher chance of getting a callback. But for black applicants, even if you were seen in person, you had like a marginally better chance of being called back, like I think 2% or something for black applicants. It was the difference between seeing them in person or not, for getting a callback. But furthermore, there are also the psychological and emotional consequences of such a question being asked. When ex-prisoners are forced to check this box on every application, they're forcefully reminded that despite the time that they've served, they will always be different than others, you know. It's a kind of psychological alienation that can't be ignored. And if you're worried about people reintegrating into your communities and your society, then you can't have them be psychologically alienated from the rest of you. Every rejected application also has a similar toll because there's no way to know if they were rejected because of their ex-prisoner status or just because of something else. But the mere possibility of it being because of their status leads to further psychological damage and alienation. So Pager, who we just talked about, who ran the study before, actually says that ex-prisoners know that they're open to discrimination, which leads to less motivation to apply at all. Even without a criminal record, you know, finding a job is mentally taxing enough. Think about how many jobs like most of you probably had to apply to right out of college or wherever. So that's difficult enough. Finding a job while contending with all these factors is a whole other ballgame. But with a few of these reasons out of the way, let's get back into kind of more of like the history and actual stuff that's going on with the Ban the Box movement. So the Ban the Box movement grew out of the efforts of an organization called All of Us or None in 2004. That organization describes themselves as a grassroots civil and human rights organization fighting for the rights of formerly and currently incarcerated people and our families, and fighting against the discrimination that people face every day because of their arrests or convictions. So, with that kind of like mission statement and self-description in mind, it makes a lot of sense that they'd have something, that they'd support something like the Ban the Box movement, that they'd create something like that. There's a pledge that's actually part of the Ban the Box movement, which calls upon both individuals and employers to take up the fight against ex-prisoner targeted discrimination. So, on the side of the individuals, the pledge urges them to welcome the ex-incarcerated into their communities and to support changes in discriminatory policies. On the other hand, they ask employers to thus hire and support the ex-incarcerated to support the elimination of restrictions that would preclude the ex-incarcerated from being hired. That's kind of like just a big way of saying there are restrictions on ex-prisoners being hired to certain positions or things, and they want employers to fight against that. And finally, to encourage other employers to similarly institute fair hiring practices. So that's kind of like they want employers to pressure other employers into doing the same thing. So NELP, the National Employment Law Project, actually has a good summary of where we're at right now in general. This is as of their 2015 article. So as of August 2015, there were 35 states with ban the box laws on file. They're all meant to delay the conviction history question from applications and to put off background checks until later in the process, like until after the interview is over and the hiring process is over, for the most part, like they've given you your employment offer and everything. So these laws have pretty broad support and even garnered support from Obama when he was in office and have recently passed the House of Representatives for federal jobs as of July 2019. But mostly, though, these laws only applied, like, they only applied on a federal level. Even the one that's being introduced was only on a federal level as well, but it was made to codify it for all 50 states, not just the 35. But in 13 of those states, one of which is Illinois, these laws are actually extended to private employers as well. There are also various cities and counties which are independently involved, you know, numbering over 150 cities and counties that have federal ban the box laws, and 31 of those have both private and federal ban the box laws. There are also caveats and unique aspects to many of these laws as well. So, for example, according to NOLO.com, California employers need to do a, quote, multi-factored individual analysis of whether the criminal record justifies denying employment, which is a much higher bar than the Illinois law that we mentioned earlier has. So you can, like, even see then that there's a good amount of variance between these different states and the ways that they have these things set up. And also there's the fact that such laws aren't the limit either in many places. So many areas and employers follow the long list of guidances set forth by the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, or EEOC, with regards to hiring individuals with past criminal records. So it's not just the ban the box laws that are in effect here. There's, like, a lot of fair chance laws at play. And so other places will also incentivize hiring within the community, for example, which also makes the applications of ex-prisoners more competitive while supporting their reintegration into their community, because you're basically incentivizing people to hire people within their community. And if you're an ex-prisoner who just got out and wants to reintegrate into their community, then having these opportunities would be perfect for you. And furthermore, another thing is that these initiatives actually affect a lot more people than you might think. According to Vox, about a third of all non-working men between 23 and 54 have criminal records. The total number of how it affects, like, all men in general is, according to the Ban the Box campaign, is pretty high as well. They say that of all adults in America, about 25% to 33% have a conviction history. So on the low end there, that's about one out of every four that these laws are affecting that have been affected by their brush with the criminal justice system. And some even think that, some analysts actually even think that mass incarceration is why we have a decline in our labor force, just like the degree to which mass incarceration has taken place or increased over the last couple decades or so. I think it, like, peaked somewhere around 2007 with 7.3 million incarcerated at the time. So it has been pretty crazy, these numbers, if anyone wants to go out and look at them. But so furthermore then, such measures like the Ban the Box law will actually help to increase economic mobility, because what happens is that when you have mass incarceration, when you have these 25% of all men that have conviction history, these convictions, the convictions reduce economic mobility, especially amongst the impoverished, you know, who are disproportionately likely to be imprisoned as well. For example, there was another study that people had done, and that study said that among those in the bottom 20% of income, two-thirds of men without criminal record moved out of it by the next year. On the other hand, only a quarter of those with criminal records had moved out of it. So that's kind of like almost like a 50% difference between whether or not you have a criminal record defining whether or not you can move out of the bottom one-fifth of percentage of income. So that's a pretty big difference just based on the fact that you've had a brush with the criminal justice system and based on the fact that this affects, like, at least a quarter of the male population of the United States. That's at an adult age. But you know, this doesn't really even need to go as far as having an extensive criminal record or anything on the books. Just being arrested actually made it more difficult to work than having other extenuating factors like long-term employment or not having any full-time job ever. That just being arrested was counted as being worse than those two factors when it came to prospective employers. And again, that's without a conviction or anything. This is just like the base level of being involved with the criminal justice system. And so then, considering just the sheer amount of people that the box affects, it's really no wonder that about 238 million people live in an area that has Ban the Box initiatives or fair chance policies on the books. Of that, like 238, there are 100 million in areas that have Ban the Box laws outright, so not just like fair chance policies or things like that. And Ban the Box laws have actually had significant impact in many areas. I think the most significant area that people like to talk about is in Durham, North Carolina, where the percentage of city employees with criminal records was 7 times larger in 2014 than in 2011, so when the Ban the Box law was passed. So basically, in the course of 3 years, there were 7 times more city employees with criminal records than there were before. The link towards the usefulness of Ban the Box laws are more tenuous when it comes to the private sectors, but at the very least, employers said that they didn't think that there was really any negative impact on the hiring process. What they said was, like, it's not really that much more expensive or complicated, so it's not that big of a deal, is what people reported that most employers had said. But we'll also get a bit into why this tenuous link in the private sector is happening. We'll get into that a bit later. And so these laws and sentiments have had real punitive impacts as well, though, like as we'll see later, it's not always the case. In addition to sufficiently motivating certain agencies to hire ex-incarcerated individuals, the EEOC has used them to fine companies in violation for millions of dollars. As a result of such movements, the EEOC has actually updated their guidance to include arrests and convictions with relation to Title VII, which is based on preventing employment discrimination based on race, color, religion, sex, or national origin. Companies aren't allowed to have a screening or hiring policy that disproportionately excludes a Title VII protected group if the employer can't show that their policy is necessary for the position and is related to the job. And the way that the EEOC has made this connection is that, like we said earlier, African Americans are disproportionately incarcerated, and so thus, if you are discriminating based on the arrest and conviction history of people, you are thus discriminating based on the race of people, which is a Title VII violation. So, for example, for that, in 2012, Pepsi was actually fined $3.13 million for being in non-compliance, as they were blanket banning the hiring of any person with a felony conviction, which the EEOC tied to the racial discrimination of African Americans. However, there's still many cases with violations of Ban the Box policies. So, from a story by Margaret Barthel in The Atlantic, many ex-incarcerated individuals have complained that employers had rescinded their employment offer after a background check, even though they're not technically allowed to do so without, quote, a legitimate business reason. Like, that's actually the legal thing is they need to have a legitimate business reason. Oftentimes, these individuals weren't actually given a reason as to why the offer was rescinded, but were just kind of left to wonder as to it, and really only one thing sticks out for most of them, which is their criminal record. So oftentimes, even when reached for comments, spokespeople for the companies refuse to say anything at all, which, further implies this thing that it probably was because of their criminal record, even though they legally should not be allowed to discriminate based on that. But it's hard to prove those kind of things, right? So such violations could then help explain the findings of some studies about the apparent lack of effectiveness of Ban the Box initiatives on private industries, as it just seems that they just might not be complying at all. So earlier, where we talked about there was this tenuous link between the usage of Ban the Box initiatives and their effect in the private sector, it just looks like the private industry really isn't complying at all in a lot of cases. States have actually reported receiving hundreds of Ban the Box related criminals from ex-prisoners who claim to have been discriminated against based on their criminal history. Some states and cities handle the initiatives with differing ease and like with a differing amount of complaints. California, for example, received 413 complaints in almost 2 years, while DC got 500 to 700 per year, with it ramping up. On the other hand, cities like Seattle only had 37 complaints, and Massachusetts as a state only had 21 in 2018. But to address this, like, crazy disparity in complaints between states, people overseeing the implementation of these laws actually say that low complaint numbers don't necessarily mean better compliance, but rather an underreporting of violations. And that could take place in a bunch of ways. It could just be that people don't have the information that they need to report these things. It could mean that they don't even know that they have these rights. They don't know that these laws exist, etc., etc. It could mean that there isn't really a clear path for them to complain about these kind of things. Like, there isn't an agency that handles these kind of things in their state properly. So it could mean a lot of things, but that's just to keep in mind when you hear that something like Massachusetts only has 21 complaints. It could be that they have a lot more, but they're just really underreported. So, according to Barthel, the Atlantic author, most violations of ban the box laws are for the obvious reason, which is that companies just didn't remove the box at all. Actually, 94% of the complaints in DC were about employers who simply chose not to remove these questions from the application forms. In the rest, the other 6%, complaints were re related to a decision made during the interview and hiring process, and these are a lot harder to identify and investigate because a lot of it's kind of like a he said, she said kind of thing, or like they've rejected you after they gave you the offer, but they don't have to tell you why. So, yeah, there's that kind of thing. But there is still more work to be done on the subject as well. So while some studies show that these policies are working properly in the public sectors, others say that these policies actually hurt Black and Hispanic applicants, especially in the private sector. These other studies claim that this is because when employers can't ask about criminal background, they just use race as a proxy instead. This is according to a study run by Jennifer Doleac, a Texas A&M economist. However, this kind of violation would be a much more egregious violation of existing anti-discrimination laws, not just ban the box ones. So if they were actually found to be in violation of these, the fines they would get would be enormous compared to if they just violated the ban the box ones. But other critics also say that limitations, where like you take out the ban the box question, or the box question, sorry, they say that these limitations can be ignored by something as trivial as a Google search. But many proponents would still agree then that the laws are useful tools as they are at least some measure of protection against such discrimination based on criminal record. If anything, they argue that more protections might be necessary to kind of give these things more teeth. And so a report by the Center for American Progress actually says this, that other fair chance hiring policies are needed and that more support towards policy implementation is necessary. Due to the use of race as a proxy, racial disparities actually increased in some areas after ban the box policies were passed. That's what we just talked about. Thus, they argue that a variety of things should be done by policy implementers. Implementers are like your state governments, your localities, your federal government. So policy implementers and employers. So two different people that this report calls out there. For implementers, they recommend that ban the box legislation is adopted in all states where it's not adopted yet, and that these policies should cover both public and private employers, so kind of just make these things applicable to everyone. Furthermore, they call for an increase in employment opportunities for returning citizens, legislation and guidance on expungement and record sealing for ex-prisoners, an increase in supportive services for returning citizens. Returning citizens is just referring to people who are no longer incarcerated and have kind of like returned to society and everything. And they also, the report also calls for peer-to-peer networks for employers to discuss the EEOC best practices to kind of make sure that everyone's in accordance with these rules and following the same rules and everything. For employers, they recommend that they allow applicants to more easily review background checks for the accuracy, because that's one thing that hasn't really been addressed before, which is, well, who knows how accurate these background checks actually are, and that they let applicants give them evidence of rehabilitation or mitigation, to show basically how they've been rehabilitated, and those would be evidences of probation compliance, parole compliance, letters from trusted community members, etc. So there'd be that as well. And the other thing they recommend for employers is that they all fully adopt EEOC best practices. So it seems like the main thread of all these recommendations is basically make sure that all these restrictions and everything when it comes to ban box, make sure that they apply to everyone equally. Public and private employers in every single state. And that's kind of to reduce this, there's kind of like a question between all these businesses of, well, what are the rules here and what are the rules there? If I'm a company that spans across different states, how am I supposed to be in compliance with these laws? And so the biggest thing that the biggest thread that's running through here is just make everything standardized for all employers. Make all the rules the same for all of them. Make sure that all these policy implementers are implementing the same rules, that kind of stuff. And so, all in all, it's a pretty complicated issue, but I think the ban the box laws definitely have the right sentiment at heart. The implementation is getting to be a bit difficult and counterproductive at times, as has been talked about, but if such recommendations are taken seriously and acted upon, most of these issues should clear right up, because it seems like most of these issues have to do with the fact that the implementation really just isn't strong enough, and part of that is because people are confused about how to implement this, about what kind of rules they should be following and everything. And so now let's talk about what you could do if you want to get involved. So if you want to get involved, NELP actually provides a toolkit to advocate for Ban the Box. I think it's completely free. It's just all online and everything. So this toolkit is on their website, and it includes things like a fact sheet for policy, model laws for Ban the Box, a summary of supporting research, and much more. Like, there's seriously a lot of good stuff there. Even if your interest is purely academic, I think it's still worth checking out. You can also get directly involved with the movement on the Ban the Box campaign website, which is, easily remembered as Ban the Bo sorry, as BanTheBoxCampaign.org. Or if you want to get involved with All of Us or None, they have their own website and focuses. So like they go beyond the Ban the Box campaign because they have other things that they're involved with as well. So yep, that's All of Us or None if you want to get involved with them. So next time I want to talk more about the box, or at least like the sentiment it reflects. So this time I want to talk about it more with relation to its effects on things like housing. After all, Ban the Box is mainly about applications for employment, which is what we're talking about here, but the ideals and work behind it extend to housing as well. And places like New York, New Jersey have actually adopted that kind of mentality and put that into law. But we'll leave that for next time. So as for today, we'll make that our show. Thank you as always for listening. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, feel free to email us at prisonjusticeshow@gmail.com. We'll be sure to respond to everything that needs a response, and until then, I hope you have